Hi, and welcome to Moves That Matter. I'm your host, Dr. Clyde Posley, and we're delighted to have you with us today. We've got another powerful show focused on saving our African-American males, discussing the development of our African-American males, the plight, the trauma, the difficulty, and today, the success of many of our African-American males. I want to focus your attention today on what we can do about helping our young men in terms of solutions. Again, you know, I have a book out, More Than Icons and Images, Uncovering the Hidden Protest Narrative of the Black American Athlete in the 21st Century. You can order that book on drclydeposley.com, on Amazon, whatever, and wherever books are sold, including Barnes & Noble's. I'm going to be right back in just a second with a powerful discussion with a talented African-American male. He and his father are here with us because we never want to give the notion that we think all African-American males are failing. We don't suggest that. We've never suggested that. But I do want to bring to you a young millennial who has made some choices that I think other millennials ought to make in theory and in practice to get the same result, because you are a product of your choices and your habits. We have a young man here with us today that's going to help us grapple with this notion of saving our African-American males. You don't want to miss this. I'll be right back. Welcome back to Moves That Matter. As promised, we have a powerful segment about saving our African-American males that includes solutions as well as an example today that many of our African-American males, our millennials, are doing some powerful things in the community and making the right choices. And you may have noticed this month I've had a special guest with me, Mr. Eric Simmons, the entire month of July. We've been friends for over 40 years, grew up in the same neighborhood, and God bless us to take what we learned and get to another level by His grace. Glad to have you back, my man.
Glad to be here,
all
sir.
All right, and you brought a special guest with us, with you today. Can you talk to us about who you brought with you today?
Yeah, today we have a special guest. My son, Miles Simmons, is here. I'll let him talk about himself. He's a student at IU South Bend, a student athlete. So I'll let him speak to that for a minute.
Hello, everyone. My name is Miles Simmons. I'm a business marketing major at IU South Bend. I'm also a basketball player. I play point guard and shooting guard, student athlete. So I'm just thankful to be here.
All right. Glad to have you. Now, if you don't mind, you know, I'm also a professor. Can you talk to us a little bit about your GPA?
Yes. I'm a 4.0 student. Business marketing major. I feel like I'm going to be one of the best entrepreneurs in the city of Indianapolis once I reach my prime. And I just think books are over basketball and knowledge is power. So
I'm
definitely heading the books.
I agree with you. So let's jump right in. We've been discussing saving our African-American males. And today we want to talk about a young man whose decisions are saving his life.
Absolutely.
We the last thing, and Mr. Simmons and I concur, we don't want to ever give the notion that we think all African-American males are in turmoil.
No.
While our skin color may have us in peril to some degree socially, there are some of us making some decisions about our future and creating some habits to give us some success. Miles, if you don't mind, talk to us a little bit about what in your mind it's like being an African American male in America.
Being an African American male in America is pretty complicated. I feel like the playing field is not always level for us, and we have to work much harder than everyone else. But I feel like if you embrace the struggle and you embrace the grind, it'll make you stronger and better at the end of the day. It's still a possibility for success. It's still a possibility of you doing things that God put you on this earth to do, even though we don't have it as easy as everyone else. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
What are some of the potential pitfalls that have come your way? Things you've had to avoid to stay on the path that you're on?
Really just peer pressure and things of that nature. Seeing some of the people you may have grown up around take the wrong path or the wrong road, making the wrong decisions and just learning from it. I really looked at my peers and learned from their mistakes. I've been blessed with a great dad and a great family. So I've also learned from my dad's mistakes that he's made as a young man. So really just being, you know, knowing what to do and what not to do.
Yeah, that's powerful what you were saying, Miles, and I appreciate you being transparent about that. As I was mentally prepping for the show, I was thinking about, you know, how mentoring, I was thinking about your relationship with your father, actually, and how mentoring is so important. But there's often a component of mentoring that we as African-American males miss, and it is, in my view, often when an African-American male hides the fact that we, and I'm including myself, make mistakes, and that also helps to make us valuable to the next generation that we have learned from those mistakes and share
absolutely
them with them.
Absolutely, yes,
we
sir
need to do that. And I was thinking about that. And I don't know any specific mistakes your father has made. That's why I said I'm talking about
tons
myself. I know that I've made some.
Yeah.
But to help African-American males, we have to share that with them. Hey, man,
yeah,
when I did this, and this was wrong, I did it because of X, Y, or Z, but I did it, and you're going to make some mistakes. Here's how you don't reproduce what I did. Am I making any sense?
Oh, you're making great
sense.
What
are your thoughts about that?
Well, Miles and I have a great relationship, mm-hmm, and Pastor, I keep it 100 with him. He mm-hmm knows about some of the things that happened to me as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
He knows.
As do my sons. I talk to him about
there's it. There's no perfection out here.
Exactly.
You
and
know,
it's misguiding to tell them they're going to be perfect.
My God.
Or that we expect it.
And I told him, I said, Dad knows you're going to fall sometimes. Mm-hmm. But it's the effort and the being able to come back
right
from that falling that can keep you where you need to
that's
be.
Right.
He and I talk.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about things that matter.
Mm-hmm.
We have jive. I've coached him his whole life until he got about the eighth grade. And then I had to step back because coaching was taking a toll on our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want that to happen.
Right.
So he's grown up into a fine young man that's dealing with things on his own.
Right.
But at the end of the day, he has God in his life, and
right
he'll see through. He'll
that's
be able
right
to see himself through.
That's
so,
right. Miles, what is the millennial generation missing today that's leading to such the death, the tragedy, sometime lack of political participation? What would make, if you could craft a strong millennial generation, how would you do it?
I would craft the generation with a foundation of God and people that follow Christ. I think also another thing that's missing in our generation is hope, which is also God in Christ. That's
wow
that's what will
go
give
together
you hope.
That's right.
So, I mean, it's just hope and lack of looking into the future, because if you feel that you don't have a future, then some of the decisions that you make today, you're not considering your future. You're just considering your emotions right now. And I feel like emotion is the enemy of logic.
Mm-hmm.
So if we react emotionally,
say that again.
Emotion is the enemy of logic.
That's a profound statement.
Yeah, if you make a decision emotionally, it might not be logical. So,
mm-hmm,
and that can happen a lot when you don't really see the future.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, many of our young, your father and I were in a discussion with a pastor recently, and the pastor brought up that it's not it's unnatural for young people to be so hopeless. As you know, probably know, your father met with two 17-year-olds. He's going to talk a little bit more about that today. Who didn't seem to have much hope about their future. They were prepared to die in the streets.
Exactly.
Can you talk about where you may have seen millennials lose hope? You know, I had an experience, you know, in my family that I had to recover from. And it made me lose hope for a lot of it. Had I stayed in that spot, as the pastor we were talking about,
sure,
had I stayed in that spot, I wouldn't be Dr. Posley.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be saved.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be the father that I'm trying to be today. And so a lot of young people have a spot that they never get out of.
Yeah.
Do you see that in young people? And if so, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I definitely see people stuck in a spot that they feel that there's no exit to, or they just feel like they've lost hope. And a lot of times people don't understand what's really going on. They just, maybe something bad has happened to them. Maybe the streets, maybe it could. A lot of times I see death, like a person's death has affected that person close to them. And after that person, that loved one has passed away, they feel like there's no point in living on, because, you know, we all have people that are dear to our hearts and we kind of live for. So if that just gets taken away, sometimes it's hard for people that aren't as strong or mentally strong or even spiritual to get through that. So
that's true. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, you would probably agree, Brother Simmons, that our culture has become so, as the Bible says, acquainted with grief.
Yeah.
It's that it's sometimes it's hard for people to get out of it. They accept depression as a normal way of black life.
Mm-hmm. They do.
What do you think about that?
You know what? I think, Pastor, that a lot of times the grief that we suffer from has been generational.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody dies, like my son spoke of, somebody dies and we stay in that spot. A lot of times, us in the black community, we don't seek out the help we need to come from that spot. Going to see professionals. Nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to people to get you through.
I've had them on my show.
What you're going through.
Same notion.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to be as whole as we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God put these professionals here so we can seek their help.
That's right.
Exactly. And we've got to reach out.
And gifted them to do so.
Gifted.
I think our communities are kind of behind the eight ball when it comes to mental health awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand that sometimes when they're feeling sad, it's not just that they're sad or they're down. It's,
yeah, it's
that
not,
their morale is down. It's really that something's going on.
There's a chemical imbalance.
Yeah, it's a chemical imbalance.
Right.
Exactly. So
right.
we do often need to go talk to professionals and go talk to people. And it's just therapeutic to tell someone else your problems. And a lot of us have that problem because we're sometimes taught to keep everything inside and not share that. So that's definitely a problem.
Miles, I think you and your father owned something very, very powerful. If you know, I've had mental. In fact, I'm writing a book. I'm writing a book right now about emotional healing for black leadership.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I have I've brought a therapist on this show more than once. In fact, the first guest in my co-facilitator in the millennial service I'm starting to talk to you about is going to be Kamish Nunley. She's a mental health therapist. Let's talk about this. And the reason I want to do it is because I think a lot of what is happening with millennials and not just millennials but African American males is emotional and mental health neglect.
I agree.
If a person, to be specific, is diagnosed with bipolar mania or whatever the case, it is no different than being diagnosed with diabetes or high blood pressure.
Agree.
And more so like high blood pressure because they call that the silent killer.
The silent.
Well, if you have emotional, post-traumatic stress disorder, but Terry DeGree would call it post-traumatic slave disorder. Or if you have some emotional pain and you don't get it dealt with, it's going to be a silent killer.
It's going to kill.
And I think that a lot of our young men, I think what is happening is emotional neglect.
I agree.
Why in the African-American community are we allowing this purveyor to kill our young men? Why won't we speak up? What's the stigma?
You know, Doctor, I think that we as a people just say, I can get through it.
Mm-hmm. We become accustomed
to
making do.
We just say, tomorrow will be okay. I'm going to take a nap. And
this too shall pass.
But this too does not pass.
That's right.
So often.
That's right.
You carry that stuff with you like luggage
for
the rest of your life until you're able to speak to somebody and get the help that you need to come out of it. Sometimes you can't do it alone.
That's powerful. You know something? Let me throw this out.
Sure.
Because I know you'll get loud, get excited when I say something. Watch this. I got this theory. And I want to throw this at you. I want you to comment about it, 2 miles.
Okay.
Let me bear it out.
Sure.
I think because of the absenteeism of many fathers in the African American community, even some that were there but absent as a father, the onus then fell on women to raise sons.
Mm.
Women by nature lead with their emotions, not necessarily intentionally, but because they're nurturers.
That's right.
And the way you nurture is with feeling often, probably more often than they should, which keeps them, in many instances, letting their heart guide them instead of logic. What is right for my boy, since I'm in this position where his father's not doing stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that some of our African-American males today are suffering in this new way that we're discovering from the absence of male leadership because they are being now nurtured by women who are leading with emotion, trying to protect him from what they think? You follow what I'm
saying? Oh, I follow you completely.
You know, because I see energy as I see emotion as energy in motion.
Yeah.
And when people, when a woman overly nurtures a young man, she can cause him to start to do as Miles said.
Yeah.
Lead with, he starts to mimic leading with his emotions.
He does.
And not necessarily logic.
Oh my
because
God.
He's been nurtured by a model that does that. I'm not saying women are evil or anything like
that. No, no.
I'm simply saying, you know, Miles touched on something.
Yeah.
And that may be an ill among our African American males that they don't even really realize, mm-hmm. that they don't even think logically. That's why they're so quick to respond, because logic is not something they're being nurtured to. What do you guys think?
Doctor, you hit it out the ballpark with that. I see that on a daily. Young emotional males.
Mm-hmm. And what? It's got to be coming from somewhere.
It's not natural
us to be emotional first as men.
It is not.
Right.
And I see it quite often. I see young men, when I get ready to have a conversation with them, the first thing they go is
huffing, puffing,
I'm
blowing.
I'm like, wait a minute, son. Where is that coming from? We didn't do that young men.
That's right. That's right.
No, sit up here, eye to eye contact.
And look me in the
and
eye.
Talk to me.
Right.
And let me know what's going on with you. And I think what you just said, like I said, that was a home run. You're helping somebody with that analogy.
I hope to be helping some mother who may not have intentionally, Miles.
Yeah.
Knew that she was doing this, since they are in the role, we cannot deny the dominant influence of women.
That's right.
Fortunate or unfortunate. And now that's not to suggest that women cannot powerfully affect a young man. W.E.B. Du Bois was raised by his mother.
Mm-hmm.
She was raped by a slave owner. And his father was a slave master.
Yeah.
Frederick Douglass' mother was raped by a slave master and raised. So a mother can raise a black man to be a black man, but she can't turn him into a bundle of emotions and do so.
You cannot.
You know, she can. Miles, I believe. What do you see in the sports world? Do you see how dangerous emotion? Uncontrolled emotions can affect a sports career.
Exactly. It definitely can affect the sports career. It can change a game, just not even a career. It can just change the trajectory of the way a game's going.
Mm-hmm.
If something's not going your way and you react emotionally, you might get a technical foul or anything. And you know, once you look back at the film at the end of the game, you're like, man, I should have never got that. That was an emotional decision. That wasn't a logical decision.
Yeah.
Logical would have been to just shut my mouth, not talk to the ref.
Walk away.
And we would still be winning right now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, that's definitely a problem. It's a lack. It's not a balance. When it's just the mother there, it's just her way. It's just, and that's how you adapt to it. And her ways are definitely going to affect her child. And when the dad's not there, that balance is not there. So
that's powerful. But I see. I'm a big NBA fan. I used to call myself trying to play basketball.
It was nice.
So you know, but when I see Boogie Cousins, when I see Draymond Green, I cringe.
I do as well.
Because I see something, you know, my doctoral work is in what's called psychoanalytics. It's kind of like social science versus just internal psychology.
Okay.
It's the study of how a society thinks. If something's wrong when we start to accept that these men who are playing basketball for a living would want to cuss a man out. Do you remember you're making $30 million to come play basketball?
That's right. Yeah.
Something's wrong when you have the power to control your whole world.
Yeah.
And you don't get your way in this instance, and you need to threaten a man's life.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Something's deeper.
Yeah.
Something's going on deeper there.
Yeah.
You know, Miles. I relative to emotion and response. There are several ways that those lack of emotions being played out several directions they can take. Sometimes it's frivolous spending, emotional spending. Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted you to talk about is what your where your generation is from your perspective financially. Is emotion playing a part in Generation X's or the millennial generation's the way they spend their money, what they spend their money on, what they think money is for? Mm-hmm. Because if they are, that can lead indirectly to the demise of a generation in African-American males. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of emotional spending going on. It's a lot of spending based on what others would think about me instead of spending on what really needs to be spent on. I mean, like you said, being black in America, it is kind of hard, and we are kind of behind the eight ball in certain things because of systematic racism and systematic injustices. But we're not doing terrible. I mean, African Americans in 2015, their purchasing power was about $1 trillion. So I mean, $1 trillion. So, but that's not bad. You know what I'm saying? But it's bad because the money that we're getting is not circulating in the black community.
Could be so much better. Right?
For every dollar that's in the black community, only 2 cents is being
circulated into the community.
All of our spending is being spent with others, and that's not the way it should go. That's not the way Asian communities are working, you know what I'm saying? So I think a lot of our money should be circulated back into our communities, and that'll do a lot of fixing the problems.
Do something for me, Miles. Look into the camera and imagine that you're having a conversation with a group of African-American males. You're standing there, you're talking to them. Have a Nipsey Hussle conversation.
Yes, sir.
With a group of African-American males, and I'm going to throw a question at you, and you answer them.
Okay.
Man, listen. What does it matter where I spend my money? I made this money. I didn't make this money for my culture. I made it for me. Answer that.
I tell them that it doesn't. I can't tell you where to spend your money because it is your money. But you should be interested and you should be wanting to know how am I affecting my community. You're a black male. You're a black person. You should want the best for your people. I say that. To reach success and for black people to come out of the situations that we're in, these tough situations, we need to depend on ourselves because no one else is going to get us out of some of the financial troubles that we're going through. I think black people should buy, sell, and produce our own products. And we should put that money back into each other. And as you keep doing that, you'll see that we'll get to a better place financially.
But how can we learn that?
How
did you learn it? Where can they learn it? How can young black African-American males or millennials learn more about financial literacy and learn how to make their dollars make sense?
And that's one of the big things right there. There's not a whole lot of avenues to go down to teach just our kids and our communities about financial fitness and financial literacy. But there's definitely, I mean, a lot of the stuff I've learned have been from podcasts just like this, the Breakfast Club, things like that, where they've had people on there that are black and that have experience in this field and they're teaching. And I've just learned through the internet, to be honest. I'm also a college student, so a lot of that has came from that. But I mean, read. I mean, knowledge is out there for you to get. So it's out there. You just have to go find it.
Good job. You have touched on some powerful things, man. You know, we in the African-American community, in my view, Miles, are the only culture, at least in America, that fights itself. Asians do not fight Asians. Hebrews do not Jews. Do not fight each other. They know that we are going to spend our money with you,
and we
expect that you're going to turn this money back around and spend it in businesses that we own. And I'm going to tell you something that people are not discussing. Black people are no longer the dominant even minority in America.
Exactly.
This next census will prove, the last census has let us know that Latino Americans, Mexicans, are at 19 to 20% of the American culture, and black people are declining. We are less than 15%.
Wow.
I was just listening at a talk show today that's going to explain that in the 2020 elections, more Latinos will vote than African Americans have voted in the last two elections.
Oh, that's good.
So we don't even have the power now to shift. We have got to find a way to get this information out and learn to do just as Miles said. Work within our culture to strengthen our culture. And it doesn't mean to hate white people.
No, absolutely not.
It doesn't mean to hate Latinos.
No.
It does, but there's nothing wrong
Just like if we grew up in the hood.
Yeah.
The Simmons helped the Simmons. Exactly. They didn't hate the Posleys.
That's
the
right.
Posleys worked to develop the Posleys. Mm-hmm. Didn't mean we had to, we didn't hate the Simmons.
That's exactly. Right.
We made sure because together we're all better.
Exactly. It was solid.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with depending on your brother to help you out and pick you up out of certain bad situations.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with a little bit of nepotism. Everyone does it.
Absolutely. It's biblical. It's biblical. It's biblical. I wish I had time to get into that. It's biblical. Listen, man, you guys have been great, a great, great guest. I hope to have you back, man. I only have a limited amount of time for this show. I'm going to have to do something about that. I'm going to start talking to my viewers about how they can participate in the giving for this show so we can expand our time because I believe we're talking about some powerful things. Miles is sharp. He's prepared for the world. And he's got somebody standing by his side, just like a coach. Coach doesn't play.
Yeah.
They help with the plays.
Well, thank you so much.
And one of the things I always say is one day, if you're successful, one day, Miles shouldn't need your specific leadership. Yeah. Great leadership renders itself ultimately unnecessary.
That's right.
Thanks, man.
Thank you,
sir. Appreciate you being here. Thank you, Mr. Miles.
You as well.
God bless you.
God
Listen,
bless you.
That is our show for today. I'm going to close out by telling you guys, we are not done talking about African-American males. We need African-American males. We need these kinds of conversations, and there are going to be more conversations coming. My show here, Moves That Matters, is focused on the issues that most people don't want to talk about. While we love your viewership, want you to hit share, want you to interact, we're not here to please you. We're here to help you. Listen, in life, you're making constant moves that matter. Why don't you make your moves that matters one that can help African-American males, help our young people, and help us all? Because the truth of the matter is, as my friend Mr. Simmons has said so often, the Calvary is not coming. We are the Calvary.
Yes, sir.
Make your moves some moves that matters. I'm your host, Dr. Clyde Posley. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.